a packed house in the Rebel Room this week. I'm Case Kiefer, joined by Mike Grimala and Ray Brewer. Another rough weekend for the Rebels, but in more than one regard this time. 48-3 loss to Fresno State in football, as well as, just as concerning, a sneaking past Montana State Billings, I believe, in the basketball exhibition. I'll leave it up to you guys as to where to start.
I'm all fired up about this basketball game. The season's about to kick off Saturday. The Rebels, who you know and love, host Loyola Marymount, and like any team going into a new season, there's some optimism. And like any team going into a new season, there is some question marks. We just don't know how this team's going to be. And I think a lot of Rebel fans were pretty freaked out come Friday, where they barely beat a Division II-ish team. Were they two or three?
Division two.
My mom's favorite player of all time, Chris Clyborne, with a layup to win the game at the buzzer. She called me, CK, to thank me. Or she was so fired up about it. She was tuning into the game.
I think before we get any further, I want to know how he's her favorite player ever. I mean, that's really high praise. Nothing against him. That's a little surprising.
In grandma's retirement, she's taken a liking to UNLV football and basketball. And she likes Clyborne because he's skinny, and she feels that she could put some weight on him with some food.
That's a very mom reason to gravitate towards a player.
So nonetheless, we didn't learn much about the team because it is the first game. You are trying to mix and match a little bit, but folks are freaked out.
Well, the mix and match, I'll give Menzies. There are a couple different ways to approach these exhibition games, and one way is to you play your starters in the first half or so, and you blow the other team out, and then once the game is in hand, then you start to, you know, mix in and fold in your reserves and the guys at the bottom of the roster. Menzies doesn't really do that. He plays everyone from the opening tip. We're okay. No one was harmed in the falling of that microphone.
Do you think people heard that listening in, or do you think it went through softly?
Well, the microphone is there to record sound, so when it slams into the ground, it probably will make a noise.
This is what this thing does.
It's okay. Don't worry about it.
That was not the UNLV football season's hopes crashing to the floor. That was a user error by me getting tripped up over here.
That's okay. So Menzies doesn't do the thing. He doesn't play all the starters, blow them out, and then mix in his guys. He plays 1 through 12 on the roster from the opening tip-off. So, you know, Jay Green is getting first half minutes. Guys like that who are not going to play during the regular season are playing, you know, for significant stretches in the first half. So the score is going to be a little bit closer than you would expect in, you know, when you're playing a Division II exhibition game. Even with that being said, you are a little concerned about the score and more so how they got there. The biggest thing, just you look through the box score, the biggest thing that pops out is the three-pointers. Like, that's how Montana State Billings stayed close. They made 13 threes. UNLV made 4. That was an issue coming in that everyone sort of has been talking about or wondering where is UNLV's three-point offense going to come from, and then you see it come to fruition in the first game against a Division II team. It sort of validates a lot of people's fears about this team. So I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing people concerned about the outcome and the result.
The only thing I care about this season is that three-pointer streak.
Well, then this is the season to be concerned because they don't have any shooting.
I mean,
they don't have shooters, and then two, they don't take a lot of threes. They only took 10 against Montana State Billings, which in this day and age is, you're going to be last in the country in three-pointers attempted, and you don't have, you know, great marksmen taking those shots. So this is the year to be concerned.
You know, before a game, you get together in the huddle and you put your hands up, and it's like rebels on me, rebels on three, or defense on me, defense on three. I'd be like, make a three on me, make a three on three. 1, 2, 3, make a three.
This is such a revelation. I think we went over this a few weeks ago, but I had no idea this three-point streak was so meaningful to you.
It's the only thing that ties the glory days when I was a kid. Like, imagine like a young kid right now who lived through this Golden Knight Stanley Cup run, right?
Okay.
And how they've got the Golden Knights developed fans for life. Well, that's how I was when I was a kid. You know, the Rebels, during like my middle school to freshman year in high school, went to 3 Final Fours in 5 years. They won a national championship. They had like some of the game's greatest players. Like that streak is like Freddie Banks, Anderson Hunt, Gerald Patio. You know, guys that are like great shooters, Isaiah Ryder.
Well, then you're going to add Noah Robotham to your all-time favorites list because he's going to be the guy, more often than not, who extends that streak.
He went 3 for 5. I think the way you're describing it, I think it would be for best if the streak does end because I'm just so sick of hearing about the glory days.
Don't
and it holds
buy,
no bearing
don't buy
on
into
right
the
now.
Propaganda
it needs
case.
To end.
There's something there's something about history and tradition and honoring the past, and we have nothing to hang on to except for that streak.
You got some banners.
Yeah, but you can't even see them if you don't have your glasses on.
Well, yeah, I mean, if the three-point streak is important, and I know it is to a lot of people, then, you know, that may be why people are so concerned about the lack of shooting on the team. But that's one of the things you saw against Montana State. Yeah, they were passing up three-pointers. Robotham took 5, which is a good sign because he's been a high-percentage, low-volume guy in his career, so they need him to be a high-percentage, high-volume guy. So they need him to take 5 a game, and he did, and he made them, and that's good. The rest of the offense was about as expected. They worked it inside a lot. Justin got his high-efficiency buckets down low. And Mbeki Jiang was very surprising with his productivity down low. He looked like
I love that guy.
He looked completely different on offense. He was taking a couple dribbles with his back to the basket. He had the little half hook over the shoulder. It looked like he knew what he was doing on offense. So he's come a long way since last year, even though it was against Montana State. He's not going to score 17 every night. But, they look good down low with those two guys. It's just can they create offense on the perimeter? That's the big question. It was the question going into this exhibition. And that's still the big question now.
Yeah, I know you already said it, but really what jumped out to me wasn't even that they hit 4. Just I can't believe they only took 10 threes. I would say there probably is some, if this is an indication, there should be a reason for concern as far as the streak, whether you're having a connection to it or not. One other thing that jumps out, I guess, that we haven't touched is Amari Hardy going 0 for 6 from the field. That if you're looking for factors that could scare you a little bit, I would think that would be on the list.
He looked tentative. He passed up a couple. He was one of the guys I noticed early that passed up 2 open three-pointers in order to drive into the paint, whereas, you know, into congestion. He did have a couple nice drives that he just didn't finish off. One of them rolled off the rim, and the other one I think he just missed. But they're going to need him to obviously do better than that. He didn't really have a chance to get into a rhythm. Like I said, no one really had a chance to build a rhythm because they were subbing so freely. But they do need better from him on the perimeter. They need him to take threes. Even if he's not completely confident in that shot, he's still got to take them, and that's part of his job.
Okay, let me ask you this, Gramala, and we're about 8 minutes into the Rebel Room, and I've yet to be yelled at by either of you two, so small victory moving forward. It's kind of like we're playing UTEP. Marvin repeatedly has said that in all of his years of coaching, and he's in his 50s, so say 20-plus years, that this team is like the nicest group of kids, the most aware, the most conscientious group of kids he's been around. Does that mean anything? Does that mean they're going to be a better team, or are they just going to be, we're not going to read about them in the police blotter? Because he keeps going to that, and I'm saying to myself, does that mean I think they're going to be better, or are they going to be better because they're nice people, or... I can't get over that.
When he says that, I don't think it directly relates to the court because I think on any team you want, you know, some guys who are nasty and who are who play with that edge. I think when he mentions that, he's talking about more of building the culture just around the program and building like a program that players want to take part in. Like if the players feel good about it and if they feel welcomed and they're having fun and they're having a good time and they don't have to deal with, you know, the knuckleheads and the a-holes on the team, if those guys aren't in the locker room, then you're just more prone to, hey, it's Thursday night, it's 9 o'clock, let me call up my teammate and let's go get some shots up at the Mendenhall Center or something like that. You're just more prone to hang around and put more into the program if you enjoy being there and if it's a good experience for you. So having a team that's made up of good people that, you know, get along, there's something to it there. I would say more on a cultural level where you're trying to build the foundation for a good program going forward. On the court, though, I don't really think it matters that much. They, you know, whether you're a good guy or a bad guy or good grades or bad grades, you just have to follow the coach's order and play well. So that's the biggest thing. Off the court, it matters a little bit.
All right, well, before we move on from basketball, zone out just a little bit, since they do start the regular season, I believe, Saturday.
Saturday against Loyola.
I know we've briefly talked about basketball. I believe Brewer and I do have one wager going into the season from earlier this year on the podcast. I'm feeling better about that, wasn't it? That I said they would definitely lose one of their first whatever homestand games they had. Brewer guaranteed no losses. Feeling a little bit better after the Billings.
I could be paying you off this time next week.
I don't know. I think it was like a five. If it was $5 wager, if anything. But what I'm trying to get to is just to zone out a little bit. What should be the expectations going into this year? What are you guys, from a bigger view, what are we looking at going into the first regular season game?
I mean, for me, year three of Menzies, this is where usually a new coach, you expect him to take that jump. However, this is kind of the unofficial second year for him. And the way the schedule's built, I mean, they'd have to win basically every important game on the schedule and make it to the finals of the league tournament to be in the playing game of the NCAAs. The schedule is just so painfully weak. So I would just say, 22 to 24 wins and an NIT victory, and that's a success. And then year four, they got to really knock the socks off.
Yeah, same thing. There's no NCAA tournament hopes for this team. The schedule is not – they can't get an at-large berth with this schedule. They'd have to beat Reno and San Diego State in the conference tournament to get there. So you're looking at a slim chance. Big picture, got to be better than last year. You've got to – last year was 8-10 in conference play. You got to be better than that. You've got to get to 9-9 or 10-8. So you've got to get to 500 or a winning season in conference. They should. The team, I think, is better this year, the roster from top to bottom. So, yeah, 20 wins overall, 500 or better in Mountain West play, and that will be progress for Marvin Menzies, and you can sell that as, hey, we're getting better, and then we're poised. If you do that, if you get to 500 or, above 500 in Mountain West this year with this team, you are poised to take a leap next year. So that's what you've got to do this year.
I just want to see one player emerge as like, oh, gosh, we have Bryce Hamilton, or, oh, wow, Amore Hardy. Woo, let's go. And right now they don't have that alpha dog who, night in and night out, you could get 15 points from, or they could hit that ever so important three-pointer.
Chris Kleiber needs to start coming over to the Brewer household. Maybe some Mama Brewer feeding. Well, he could become that guy.
That gets him to the tournament. My dad's all in.
All right, so I think that's a pretty good overview of UNLV. Very interesting stuff. Definitely going to want to see some progress this year, as Mike alluded to. On the other side, football, definitely not going to see progress this year. We can now say that's clinched. UNLV will not go to a bowl game after its 48-3 loss to Fresno State. I will say, am I crazy, though? I have to ask you guys. 2 weeks ago, or last week, I guess, when they got destroyed by San Jose State, I felt like there was so much just engulfing negativity. I just saw everyone on social media was fire Sanchez, and certainly there's still a lot of that. But I kind of felt like this week, another blowout loss, I feel like there's been some backlash, and now, it seems like Tony Sanchez has more support after another loss than he did before one. Am I crazy? Is it just like the selective people I've seen, or is that kind of the tenor after five straight losses?
I mean, the crowd on Saturday was pretty light, and you would assume everybody who's in that crowd is a big UNLV supporter, and I think they see the writing on the wall, and they know that Tony has given the program more, has helped bring more to the program than arguably any other coach. They know this is a program that hasn't won, and why not let the guy get another year? I mean, it makes fiscal sense, and I don't think the average fan is really slicing and dicing this. I mean, I know there's a group of old school loyal UNLV supporters who've hated Sanchez from day one, but there's a lot of people, especially the shot callers in that UNLV Football Foundation, who see what he's doing behind the scenes, and they're like, listen, would the narrative have been different with Rodgers? Why not give him another year with his quarterback I mean, if you bring somebody in anyway, the only value in bringing somebody in is to get that coach further established to move into the new stadium. The thing is, you know, when you're only paying whatever the UNLV job pays, bottom tier of the Mountain West, you're not going to get anybody better. So you're just, you know, bringing somebody into the same situation. You might as well let Tony try to complete his vision one more year. And I think you're going to the negativity. I think people realize that he's done some good things. It just it hasn't happened defensively.
Yeah, I would say that the San Jose State loss, that was sort of, you saw the immediate reaction of the fan base, which was, oh, this is unacceptable, get rid of the guy. But Fresno State was a little more expected. I think you expected a blowout. You've had a little time to think on it. You've had some time to mull it over and you say, well, maybe, maybe firing the guy would be a little too rash. Let me look at the over. Who's going to come in to replace him? No one. How much money do we have to bring in a slam dunk replacement? Not much. So maybe you're just seeing the line of thinking sort of sober up after the knee-jerk reaction after that San Jose State game, and now people are starting to look at the bigger picture. And, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, unless Desiree Reed-Francois has behind the scenes has a slam dunk guy to come in and be successful here, unless she's got someone lined up, then your best bet is probably to keep Sanchez for another year.
In case, and Mike, that's the one part of this equation we don't know, is this is kind of Desiree's first big call as the athletic director, and she obviously has many ties to the East Coast. She was at Virginia Tech, a great football school, for a long time. She knows people, and she may feel that she has a young assistant or somebody who's ready to be a head coach that could come in and kind of build off what Sanchez started.
Yeah. That's the best argument for making a change is, you know, if Desiree Reed-Francois has something that she believes is better. But you've got to be sure. You've got to be certain. You can't fire Tony Sanchez without having a clear line of succession and, you know, without having everything already in place to bring in the next guy. Because firing him and then starting a coaching search and then doing all that and bringing in guys and interviewing, that's not going to work.
Yeah, it's a really tough situation. I agree. I think we mentioned last week it's just all going to come down to, I mean, this is a big moment, I feel like, for Desiree Reed-Francois. I don't know what the right answer is. I get the feelings on both. It's just hard for me. I can see as a fan where you would just be totally frustrated where a team, I mean, right now is probably a favorite to go winless in conference play. And to bring back the coach, I just feel like there's going to be a lot of apathy, as I said last week, with that. But at the same time, I do agree you need to be pretty sure you're getting someone better. And the other thing that I think works against Tony, at least in my mind, is the specter of the new stadium opening. I mean, I just really don't think you want to be in year one, ground zero of rebuilding a team when you're moving into this huge new stadium. It's supposed to be a big boost for the program. So I don't know the right answers. I see both ways. I'd say the one thing I would disagree with is that if she feels like she has the guy, I think she should go after him. I think to say there's no way we're getting any better than Tony Sanchez, that's the only thing that Ray said the whole day that kind of made me cringe. If Desiree Reed-Francois has someone she believes in, even if it's not a guy that looks like a slam dunk to us, I think
at
she's got to
she
go with it.
At least she didn't yell at me. So Rogers is back practicing, and theoretically, when he's ready to go, does he go? Because I think that could hurt Sanchez if, say, he's back for the Reno game, it's at home, and they go and they just get blown off the field by Reno. But, and then they're like, well, crap, it wasn't Rogers, it's his defense, and maybe Tony's lost the players.
You can get some leeway for the Rogers injury, but be careful there because that can backfire on Tony Sanchez because he's never going to be healthy at UNLV. It's just the offense that they run, they ask him to take 15 to 20 big hits per game, not your typical quarterback hits. These are hits where he's running between the tackles, upright, and linebackers are just pounding him. So he's never going to be a completely healthy quarterback playing at UNLV. So he's going to miss games next year. He's going to miss games the year after that. If you were taking odds on it, the odds would be for him to never play a full season of games at UNLV. So you can't use that as a an excuse that to cover the losing streak. Maybe if you want to make the case that the season would be they'd be in a better position now if he had played the whole way. Yeah, that's probably true. I wouldn't use it as a cover all for all the ills that have happened this year.
I mean, they arguably would have beat San Jose State with him, arguably, and possibly New Mexico. Even though
New Mexico hung 50 points on that. And I get it that your ball control is better with Armani and you're keeping your defense fresher and they're off the field longer. And so maybe they aren't as banged up. But 50 points is 50 points from New Mexico.
I just think they need to find out what they want to do with the program. If they want to give Tony another year, go ahead and do it. But to me, here's the deal. I don't know the finances of the program. I know what I read on LasVegasSun.com from Mike Grimala. I know what I hear in the community. I've been here my whole life. They're still paying Dave Rice. Like, are you going to pay Dave Rice, Tony Sanchez, this new coach, who you're arguably going to have to give more to, or you're just basically bringing in the same guy? I mean, Samford couldn't do it. John Robinson did it once. Hauk snuck one through once on a hot quarterback. I mean, there's never in the history of this program been, you know, back-to-back bowl games, back-to-back winning seasons. The last back-to-back winning season.
How is that
random.
An excuse to stop trying?
That's a great point. And I just don't know, like, do you need to – I think the narrative of the program has changed. You're moving into an NFL stadium. You've got this complex on campus. You need to be the best team in the Mountain West. So I think you need to spend more on getting the right coach. And I don't think they have the money to do that. Especially when they're going to have to pay to play in the new stadium.
I think he comes back for one more year, and they see what he can do next year. But then if you bring him back for one more year, I don't think 6-6 cuts it. Like, you can't say, you know, well, we won two games in 2018, so six games is a big improvement on that in 2019. Like, you're still on the original timeline if you bring him back. Like, you got to be looking at,
but
7-5,
and
8-4.
And you go to a bowl and you win the bowl.
That should have been this year.
I understand.
You don't get to push that back another year.
You're not going to fire a guy if he wins a bowl game.
Well, so it depends on who she's got lined up and how much money you can eat on the contract. If you've got someone better, I agree it would be tough, and it would be very extremely difficult for UNLV of all programs to do it after winning a bowl game. I just don't think that can be. The bowl game was your marker for success this season. It can't also be your marker for success. You can't just push it back one year and keep the same goal when you're selling that incremental progress just because you backslid this year. Mm-hmm. Coming into this season, the goal for 2019 would have been, you know, 7-5, 8-4, a big leap. That's still...
Because I think the fans out there are just considering this a wash. Our quarterback went out. You know what I mean?
Kind of depends on the fan. I mean, even though I feel like the negativity's been a little bit not as bad this week, there's still been a lot. I mean, there's a lot of people that want Tony Sanchez gone, as well as, like I said, some people that have flipped course. But I think it just depends who you ask about it, and it might sound boring, but as we've kind of alluded to this whole time, it really just comes down to Desiree Reed Francois, what she wants to do, what she feels is best for the program. We'll be there. All along to see how it plays out. San Diego State on Saturday, another game where the Rebels look a little bit against it. I think they're a 19-point underdog going into San Diego. We'll see how they play this week, see if there's any update, and we'll be back next Monday on the Rebel Room. For Mike and Ray, I'm Case. Thanks for listening.